503-733-2970. Just a moment, we begin the AM 970 noon news hour. Will, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, sir.
Hey, Rick, man. Back in the day in Corvallis, I actually got so many parking tickets before they started sending me collections and putting the boot on that one night I got pulled over, and they gave me a ticket to appear in front of the judge and arrested me because of my $300 of unpaid parking ticket.
Really? Is that true? No pressure, Sarah. Don't worry about it. Don't you worry. You're pretty little.
The best thing to do is don't pay them, because I learned the judge stopped in half.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the judge said $150. I was like, great. And ever since then, I never pay my parking tickets.
Was it? There you go. The more you know. It wasn't.
Oh, it's a good story, man. Now my college friends always made fun of me about it. So.
Well, see, and everybody should have one getting arrested story. Scotty, have you ever been arrested? Please to be telling us. I bet you have. I bet you have. I bet Scotty has been arrested. I bet he's still.
I'd rather get arrested for parking tickets than whoring around.
Fair enough. Who can argue with that? Thank you, Will. There you go. That's Will. Ladies and gentlemen, here's Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth.
Time for the Rick Emerson Noon News Hour from AM 970 Solid State Radio. And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
All righty, let's get right away. We're going to zip right through these. Lawmakers are vowing to reinstate a watchdog on Iraqi reconstruction. Senator Joe Lieberman cited countless examples of irregularities.
They found that the coalition...
I don't want to hear about Joe Lieberman's irregularity.
...could not account for nearly $9 billion it distributed to Iraq ministries.
I have a chunky discharge.
He said they found a few weapons are missing.
Sorry.
They determined that the U.S. government lost track of thousands of 9mm pistols and hundreds of assault rifles and other weapons distributed to Iraqi security forces.
That made Joe Lieberman very angry!
He said there were some problems with Halliburton.
Halliburton wasted $75 million on a failed pipeline project after ignoring a consultant's advice that the project should be further studied before... work on it began.
I don't even think he has a mouth. I think he just has a big fleshy fold in the front of his face. There's something the food goes into. But, I mean, it's just sort of a... He doesn't really sound like he has, fully formed lips and tongue to be able to speak. And it's just sort of like a big, doughy opening in the front of his head that extrudes noise.
Meanwhile, talking about Republicans, as some people do, at a White House meeting with President Bush, Florida Senator Mel Martinez says he's looking forward and is confident that Republicans will once again capture the imagination of the American people.
Martinez?
Yeah,
Martinez. What kind of Republican is he?
Well, that's going to be my job, to try to drive a message that's going to inspire, that's going to give a creative new view of what Republicans stand for and what we can be as in leadership in this country.
Okay.
Former NFL star O.J. Simpson is taking part in a disturbing new TV special entitled O.J. Simpson, If I Did It, Here's How It Happened.
Okay, who's going to watch it? Sarah? You are.
I don't. Seriously, that guy is evil. I'm not going to watch that.
Here's the thing is, you say now you're not going to watch it. Here's what's going to happen. You are going to be home that night, and you're going to be you and whoever just hanging out. You will decide, you'll go like, I got to see part of it. You will tune in for part of it. You won't be able to resist, and then you will tune out horrified about 10 minutes in.
Okay, maybe, yeah. I mean, if it's on and if
you'll
I happen to be home, I would look at it. But I'm not going to go out of my way to watch it.
And that's the thing is, everybody will tape it. And then everybody will get about 10, 12, 15 minutes into it, and they just won't be able to see. And it's two parts, man. And you know the first part's going to be pointless. I mean, that's the whole thing. You might as well just TiVo just the whole thing and just watch the second half. Because you know the first part's going to be, tomorrow night, O.J. talks about that fateful evening. And so they're not going to, you know, they're going to do it exactly like they do finales on reality shows. The first night is just going to be a recap, telling a bunch of crap we already know. Where were you when the O.J. Simpson verdict happened? Well, you were, in high school, probably.
Yeah, I was in high school, but I was in my psychology class, and he let us watch the verdict.
Oh, that's pretty great.
Mm-hmm, Mr. Reed, he was really cool.
I would like to know exactly how many man hours were lost that week from people at every... Because, you know, every business, every country in America, or every country, every company in America, just stopped, and everybody just watched the television during that. Tim, where were you when the O.J. Simpson verdict happened?
I think I was watching it on television.
Were you at work?
No, I was home.
Yeah, see, and I was at a radio station, man, and just every single person... And there was only one TV in the building for some reason, and it was in a room about the size of this one. And there was literally, there was like 50 people just jammed into the room to watch that verdict. All right, so this is a sound clip of O.J.?
Oh, no, this is Paul Kalin, Nicole Brown Simpson's attorney for the civil trial. He said the book and the TV special are tasteless.
I was stunned and astounded beyond belief. This is tastelessness risen to, an order of magnitude that's unbelievable.
An order of magnitude. I'll watch it. I totally will. I'm not gonna pay for that book. I'm gonna make sure that I get a review copy. I'm gonna make sure that I didn't get any of my money.
On to B.
B. All right.
Tretlock has returned to the leadership ranks of the Senate. Republicans have chosen him as minority whip when the Democrats assume power of the Senate in January. He says he is ready for his new role.
I'm honored to be a part of this leadership team. To support Mitch McConnell and all of my colleagues to do a job that I've always really loved the most. Count the votes.
Okay. A top American general is warning against setting a timetable for withdrawal of U.S. troops in Iraq. General Abizaid told a Senate hearing this morning that a timetable could lead to more sectarian violence and instability. He remains optimistic about his mission in Iraq.
And with the new government showing more experience and more confidence, and with Iraqi forces in particular tied to a government that shows confidence in them, I believe that we can move forward, although the work ahead will be tough.
That we can move forward, that means nothing. When you're moving forward, you're getting nothing done.
Michigan Democrat Carl Levin, who will become the chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee in January, said American voters delivered a strong message last week.
It was a message heard around the world. The American people don't accept President's recent assessment that, quote, absolutely we're winning, close quote, in Iraq, nor should we. Stay the course is not a strategy for success in Iraq.
Radio London, 1941.
Hundreds of modular homes bought by FEMA for victims of last year's hurricanes were damaged beyond repair as they sat unused and in many cases unprotected from the elements.
What is a modular home? Is that a trailer?
It's a little bit better than the trailer.
All right.
FEMA put the total damage of homes, both salvageable and unsalvageable, at $5 million. The homes cost an average of $36,000 each.
That's money well spent.
The masturbating judge parole is in the news again in Oklahoma. The state pardon and parole director said a number of factors will be reviewed regarding whether former Creek County Judge Donald Thompson is eligible for parole
this
month.
Oh, this is the guy with the penis pump.
Yeah, Terry Jenks said the board has limited options when they meet on December 5th and 6th.
Is that this year?
Number four, yeah.
You know, the board really has a couple things they could do. They can either vote no to deny the parole, or they could vote yes to recommend the parole to the governor, in which case then it would be up to the governor to whether or not he would sign the parole from that first case on to the next
case.
Well,
that's never going to happen. You don't want to be the governor that paroled the penis pump guy. That's not going to... And seriously, what kind of clout can you swing in prison? Some guy, you know, shanked some other dude, and some guy that's a hitman, some guy that embezzled $1 billion. You're in there because you were using a penis pump under the bench while you were looking over traffic cases.
The board will review a number of factors.
They look to see what the crime was that the person committed. They look to see how long they've served in prison. They look at their background and what their plans for the future are. They look to see if they've taken any programs while they've been incarcerated that may have a bearing on whether or not they're trying to improve their selves, rehabilitate themselves, things like that.
The best part about that story was how they discovered, because there was a series of what one juror referred to as clicking and whooshing noises coming from underneath the judge's robes while they were in session. This email says, Rick, thank you ever so much for saying chunky discharge and fleshy folds as I took a bite in my extra moist beef and bean burrito. Die in a fire. All right, well, thank you, sir. Here's Tim Riley.
We're all caught up.
Fantastic. Excellent. All right.
What do you want to do next?
This is the new news hour.
Oh, I have to keep going.
This is that we've just moved. This, and Sarah and I have to apologize, by which I mean me, because between the parking thing, it really was the post-hitting thing followed by the parking thing that just consumed, because it was like 12:05.
Well, and Scotty's got to be ready that it might not be one parking ticket, but two.
No, he offered to pay them all.
Okay, them all, because Davey Nipples wrote me, and when he was doing jury duty the other day, he got two parking tickets equaling $48 in an hour.
There you go, Scotty. So however many it is, you did offer right here. You were on this radio program.
So you have another 10 minutes to decide whether or not you want to pay that.
Choose and perish. You did offer to pay any and all parking tickets accrued by Sarah Dillon. So, yeah, so we had this whole rolling disaster of a parking meter discussion, followed by the post hitting, which took like four times longer than I planned. So, yeah, one is the new noon. So this is the AM 970 noon news hour. So we got the big news pile, so we can just move right through this as we normally would.
So you want me to keep reading?
Yeah, well, just your internal client. I apologize that we all have to make these adjustments. So for your purposes, reset your internal clock as though this were the noon hour. So just we will proceed, and we'll have Emma Carthy at the bottom of that. We will proceed as though this were the noon hour.
Okay. So I'll continue with these. On the eve of her latest catwalk into criminal court, hot-tempered supermodel Naomi Campbell got smacked yesterday by another hired hand who accused her of being a violent super bigot. The Renway Rebels ex-maid, Gabby Gibson, filed a lawsuit alleging that the famously feisty bombshell mocked her broken English and smacked her around because she couldn't find a pair of Campbell's Stella McCartney shoes. "You're not in the third world anymore, stupid," Campbell allegedly yelled at the Romanian housekeeper who worked for the supermodel from November 2005 to January 2006. Campbell also allegedly told Gibson, I have had it with you, you effing bitch."
Fantastic. At this point, why would anybody go to work for Naomi Campbell? Isn't it just sort of, is this the same woman?
Maybe the money's really good.
Your insurance premiums, it seems like, would escalate drastically. What with every... Turn on the microphone so we can hear that over there.
Oh, no.
Just hold it up to the microphone just once.
Oops.
There you go. That's a thing Sarah's holding in her hand. Is this the same woman she beat with a jewel-encrusted cell phone? Do we know?
I don't know.
No, there are like so many of them. So many people are suing her.
Can you hand me the... do you have the story?
Mm-hmm.
Can you hand me this? Because there's some... Let's see. This is... You're not in the third world anymore, stupid. Campbell allegedly yelled at the Romanian housekeeper. Here we go. Yeah, no, this is a separate one. Campbell is allegedly facing charges for allegedly pummeling, that's a great word, pummeling Anna Scolavino last March with a jewel-encrusted cell phone in a scrap over a pair of jeans. Her lawyer, David Breitbart, scoffed at Gibson's charges that Campbell mocked the maid's Eastern European roots. And this is what the lawyer says here, quote, "I just can't see the most beautiful black woman in the world calling someone a bad Romanian. Bad Romanian. Bad. Bad. Off the couch. I don't believe she even knew this woman was Romanian." Well, I believe that. The lawsuit claims that Campbell angrily fixated on Gibson's nationality and menaced her by asking, quote, "When will you learn English?" And seriously, okay, Naomi Campbell, first of all, when she's a 36-year-old supermodel, nobody who's 36 is a supermodel. You might be a former supermodel. Am I right, Sarah Dillon?
You're absolutely right.
You might be a former supermodel. You might have once been a supermodel. You might, in fact,
still be a model.
You might be modeling something. Some kind of wrinkle cream, I would imagine, or a corset of some type. No one who is 36 is a supermodel. When will you learn English? Here's my question. Really, if you have all the money that Naomi Campbell, why wouldn't you just hire somebody who speaks English in the first place? Why would you hire somebody who's from another country and then be surprised and irritated when they speak only broken English to you? She then said, quote, "Are all the women in Romania as stupid and pathetic as you are?"
Oh, come on. I can picture her saying that.
I can totally picture. I want to do a whole show called People I Want to See Beaten with a Shovel, starring Naomi Campbell. All right. Here's Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth.
Well, no telling what can burn up in a briefcase these days. A school bus driver last week called 911 to report an old brown briefcase wrapped in duct tape left behind in a school bus stop in Port St. John. She told deputies it seemed out of the ordinary. Brevard County Sheriff's Office evacuated the immediate area and closed down the street. A bomb unit used a robot to open the case to find out it contained fecal matter.
Where was this?
This is in someplace in Florida.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. There you go. A briefcase full of poo. All right, it's Tim Riley.
Microsoft is going to work with MetroFi Incorporated on the new free wireless internet service coming to Portland. MetroFi plans to launch the Wi-Fi service in Pioneer Courthouse Square by the end of the year and expand it to the rest of the city within 2 years. It'll cover 95% of the city.
We got this. Rick, I received two tickets at the same time. I parked in a 30-minute loading zone, and I was there for 30 minutes and got a $40 ticket. I also got one for $35 for having expired tag. Oh, that's the other thing. Is everything in your car current?
I think so.
Because that they use that as the opportunity just to look for any other, you know, if you got like a cracked tail light and anything. I thought I'd paid them both until I got a notice in the mail telling me to pay $180 or my license would be suspended. I swear to God, if I... This is an email we're reading now. This is not the view of the Rick Emerson Show or of CBS Radio. This is simply an email that I am conveying to you. I swear to God, if I see one of the meter maids writing me a ticket, I will beat them with a baseball bat. And you can already hear this on the news. He read an email saying that he would beat an email the person with a baseball bat and not feel bad about it for 1 second. F them, F them, F them. And then we have an email from a meter maid that we'll read here in a second at the Ministry of Truth. This is Tim Riley.
Pope Benedict has called a meeting with top Vatican officials to discuss lifting the celibacy requirements for priests seeking to get married. He called the summit to examine the implications of disobedience of a archbishop who was excommunicated for installing four married American men as bishops. The Vatican stressed the meeting would not be open for general discussion. Meanwhile, a 23-year-old Clover, South Carolina... Oh, this is a corpse watch.
Oh, Clover, I know the story. This is a corpse watch for Wednesday right here on the Rick Emerson Show.
I'm digging up bones, I'm digging up bones, I'm digging up bones. Assuming things that's better left alone.
You're a corpse watch for Wednesday.
So this comes from South Carolina. 23-year-old Clover man who police say tried to dig up the grave of a 12-year-old girl after seeing her picture in an obituary has been sentenced to 20 years in prison.
Is this the same, the guy from the last time?
No, she was at least of age.
Oh. Brian Nicholas Garcia never did find the girl's grave and told investigators he wanted to take her home and have fun. He pled guilty but mentally ill to two charges of destruction of a graveyard. The judge sentenced Garcia to 20 years in prison and ordered him to register as a sex offender. He was arrested in May 2005 after running through a grocery store where he once worked as in a full-length green coat, black sweater, camouflage gloves, and a mask. Officials searching his car found a black plastic bag, shovels, a pickaxe, and some other digging tools.
God almighty.
He told police he was embarrassed because he was trying to dig up the girl's grave. He had seen the name of the little girl in the obituaries in the paper. He thought she was cute and wanted to take her home. Deputies in the cemetery went to the cemetery and found a hole 3 feet deep. Garcia told him he had dug in the cemetery twice but never found the girl's body.
They sell those maps up front, friend. They're like $5. You can find where everybody's buried. And this is the second... I wonder this about the internet and about the news. This is like the second one of these stories we've had in a month, right? And we have those other... That pack of goth freaks,
mm-hmm.
where they were trying to... Well, we saw a picture in the obituary, and she looked all pretty, and she had all her teeth and no visible scars, and so we thought we'd dig her up. And this is the creepy part in this, I mean, apart from the obvious, it's not so much the grave digging, although that is creepy. It's that he constantly says, I don't know that he actually even says that he wished to engage in any sort of relations with her. It's just that he wants to take her home. I just have images of him setting up like a little... I don't know, like a little like a table at home with some dolls having tea. And just a chair set up for her. That's the really creepy part. When it's not just run-of-the-mill deviancy. It is always something just a little skewed. There's your corpse watch for Wednesday.
I'm digging up bones. I'm digging up bones.
Digging up bones.
Assuming things that's better left alone.
Tim Riley of the Ministry of Truth.
The National Investors Hall of Fame in Akron, Ohio has inducted more than 300 men and women and have honored their inventiveness, but also has a separate display about interesting things and how they came about, such as marbles and fishing lures. This month, Hidden Valley Dressing will receive recognition. It is owned by the Clorox Company. The donated recipe dates back to the 1950s at the Hidden Valley Guest Ranch in California and resulted from mixing dry seasoning with buttermilk and mayonnaise.
Is Hidden Valley an actual place?
I'm not sure.
Does it say that there's actually a Hidden Valley? I thought Hidden Valley was like Mayberry and the... Betty Crocker or whoever. It's just sort of a made-up thing. And so then the Inventors Hall of Fame for what? For ranch? No one invented ranch. It just existed.
It doesn't say.
That's like blue cheese. No one invented blue cheese. It was just sort of there, I thought.
It'll be placed in the museum's archives with the 1955 recipe for Campbell's green bean casserole.
All right, well, there you go. And at one point, here's a question. I wonder two things. A, when did people in America start eating a lot of hummus? And B, because that's a thing that I never, like 10, 12 years ago, no one ate hummus. Now everyone eats hummus everywhere you go. Second thing, at what point did ranch supplant ketchup and mustard as the preferred condiment with French fries at many late night establishments? And you know what I'm talking about. You go to ranch, and that's a thing that, again, I never encountered growing up. Now, like one out of every two people orders ranch to go with their French fries. And it's
a mayonnaise with French fries is the best.
See, but that at least I think has some historical antecedents. I think they did that in France. When I think about the French fry and ranch thing, it's like the French fry and milkshake thing. And at some point, which is two things that don't, like on the surface of it, you never would think that they go well together. You would think that the French fries and milkshakes go horribly. It's two really disparate items. And at some point, one person said, I have these French fries, I have this milkshake, I'm going to dip one in the other, and then I'm going to eat it, which is a thing that would never occur to anybody. And now everybody, and women especially, women are freaks for that for some reason. It must be some, there's got to be some weird difference between the taste buds of men and women. It's a thing that puzzles. Let's do one more. We'll break. We'll come back in the noon news hour, 1 o'clock edition, with Ed McCarthy and more from Tim Riley. So let's do one more here while we break.
Late Hollywood star James Stewart was forced to regularly visit a brothel by his Hollywood boss to prove he was not gay, according to a new biography. In his book, Jimmy Stewart, author Mark Elliott claims MGM executive Louis B. Mayer believed actors over the age of 25 who were single were closet homosexuals and set up a house of ill repute next to the studio to weed out gay characters so he could cancel their contracts. The beloved It's a Wonderful Life actor was raised as a strict Presbyterian. He had no desire to have sex with prostitutes, but his manager left him with no choice. Bill Grady is quoted in the biography as saying, quote, I had to lay down the law to him. I had to tell him, Jim, if you don't go give a manly account of yourself at least a few times, Mayer and the others will think you're gay. So get your over there and get those rocks off. With at least two of those broads.
Jimmy, and it's like you just totally picture like the fat guy like bulging out of his suit with a cigar. Jimmy, there's some whores over there. Now, they're going to give you a real good time. Now, Mr. Mayor, don't want any homos here, so you got to go over and find yourself a skis. You come back, I'll be right here. We'll talk about it. And then, Jimmy Stewart, I'm here to find a hooker. I need to find a prostitute for that. This is a moment when I really wish I could do a Jimmy Stewart. Who can do a Jimmy Stewart impression? Scotty? Anyone? Nah, it's too late. Never mind. Oh, but Mr. Potter, I need a without you banana. Let's talk to, real quickly, Chris. You're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, sir.
Hey, I got another complaint about dipping sauces. What's up with everything coming in a little cup you can dip in except for the ketchup?
I'm sorry?
The ketchup still comes in those damn little bags, and you get like three drops of ketchup. Everything else comes in a little cup you can dip your fries in.
That really is true. No, I never really thought about that. The ketchup, if you get the, you get a ranch, you get anything, you're right. And even if you get it to go, I never thought about this.
You get those damn little packs with one drop of ketchup. And do you remember Arctic Circle French fry sauce?
Oh, the Mr. Potter. Now French fry sauce is just ketchup and mayonnaise, right?
Yeah, but Arctic Circle is the one that marketed that, and they sell it by the bottle in Gladstone now.
Well, you know why that is. This is a true story, because Arctic Circle is a Mormon company. It was started by Mormons, and Salt Lake City, Utah, fry sauce is, Utah is filled with fry sauce. It is, I mean, everywhere you go, doesn't matter what are you here to go, I'm here to get the Frappuccino. Fry sauce with that, and everything you order has fry sauce. So, where there are pockets of Mormon citizens, or where there are Mormon-owned and started businesses, that is where you can find fry sauce. Fry sauce is an easy way to track the spread of Mormons throughout the country.
Hey, I've got a brother, Mormon religion.
Uh-huh.
And judging by the amount of children he has, they're full of more than just fry sauce, my friend.
I need to give you some of my fry sauce. Mr. Potter. All right, there you go. That's Chris. Thank you. On that one, though, we'll take a break. We will come back with more from the Ministry of Truth and Ed McCarthy. It's 503-733-2970. I need to buy a half and half. 503-733-2970. You stay there. The Rick Emerson Show continues after this. Don't go anywhere.
We're listening, screaming, the ground under the king. Hollywood.
Rick Emerson radio program. It's 503-733-2970. By the way, in case you're wondering, it is raining where you are. Also, there are 25 to 30 mile an hour winds. Bam. It's Rick at RickEmerson.com. You like to engage with us electronically. Oh, here's what's coming up. We got the Week in Geek coming up. News that hurts and a fantastic high concept email that we'll get to in just a few. Tim Riley returns in just a few minutes with the Ministry of Truth in this, the 1 o'clock edition of the Noon News Hour. Ladies and gentlemen, it's now welcome to the Rick Emerson Show. From the South, our good friend, CNN radio correspondent, Ed McCarthy. Ed, how are you on this fine Wednesday?
Rick, it's not a fine Wednesday. It's a rainy, soggy Wednesday. How you doing? We must have got that Pineapple Express that came from your way over to us.
Oh, no, it's still here. No, it's still here. It's going to be with us for quite some time. The thing about living in Portland is that everybody in Portland sort of shares this. That in Portland, we do have people think it rains all the time, and that's not really true. There is a rainy season, and it's from like about November to like, you know, early February. There's a season where it does rain a lot, but the thing is, every year, you sort of, like during the spring and the summer, you kind of block it out. It's like a bad childhood encounter with a priest. You just sort of repress it. I'm just saying, this is my observation as a journalist. You repress it and you sort of forget that it happened. And then, and not unlike those submerged memories that just come back to you one Thanksgiving after too much booze, the rain just comes pouring in and suddenly you remember, oh, God, I'm doomed for the next 4.5 months. I forgot all about that.
I can't take it anymore.
There you go.
We feel like we're in for this, but tomorrow should be better. But we're getting potential flooding here with this thing, and they really had some really nasty stuff come through the south.
Well, you got that in the south. You got the full-on rain where it's like the size of baseballs. I mean, that rain that gives you a concussion.
It is unbelievable today, I'll tell you. It's, for anybody hitting rush hour today, I pity them because it took me about 2.5 hours to get from the CNN Center to my fabulous home today.
Is that true? Is that going home?
Yeah, it was going home.
And damn.
That was off rush hour time, not peak.
No, that is.
What does it usually take for that distance?
It should take about 45 minutes, but if there is traffic, it'll take probably a little over an hour.
Jesus. I can't. That's like in California. I had a friend of mine that, you know, he had to take the 405 to get there. And he was just, you know, he had to be to work at 9. And so he started leaving the house, you know, 6. Just trying to, just rolling out 3 hours in advance to make sure he got there.
That's it. I leave the house 4 o'clock Eastern time in the morning, every morning.
Things in the South are not like they are elsewhere. And by the way, you're talking about this thing from Florida. In Florida, which is, where's my sounder? Florida. Which is our favorite state because about 85% of the stories that don't come from Germany come from Florida.
That's right.
And it's so we've got this today, and it is a curious thing about the Democratic Party and those folks on the left side of the political spectrum. Remember how, like, back in 2004, the Democrats were all up in arms about fraudulent voting and machines not working and nothing, ballots not being processed properly. And then, of course, in 2000, everybody was all upset about that. Curiously, now that Democrats have won the Senate and the House, they've retained control of Congress, oddly, they're all quiet about it, which is why this story sticks out. There's one Democratic congressional candidate, who I'm guessing lost, who is sequestering electronic voting machines in Florida amid concerns about malfunctioning equipment. Strangely,
with the help of a judge.
Yeah.
You know, the judge actually sided with him on this.
And so is this a guy who lost, I would imagine?
It's they're still counting. They're
counting.
He's actually it's a Republican. He's ahead of the Democrat by 380 votes. And so her name is Christine Jennings. So, she's trying to get her campaign folks in there and see what they could do. So they've gone to court now, and they had over 18,000 voters in that thing. But they had some problems with these machines, and, you know, it wasn't just Florida. It was all over. So, you know, they had problems last time, but they still haven't nailed it down yet. So, you know, maybe they'll get it done by presidential election.
Yeah,
what do you think?
It's not gonna happen. This is gonna be the story. This is gonna be like, this is the political equivalent of that story that we have every. You know, there's that flower. That, what do they call it? The death flower, the corpse flower, whatever it is. That flower that blooms and it smells like a corpse or whatever, and you always hear this about, this flower blooms once every 13 and a half years, and yet it seems like I have that story in the news about every 5 months.
Well, that's right. Well, it's bloomed now in Florida's 13th congressional district.
That's what I'm saying. This voting machine story is going to be exactly the same thing. Every 2 years for the rest, I'm going to be 85 years old and incontinent on the front porch of a nursing home somewhere, and they're going to be talking about some election on Mars and whether or not the punch ballot worked and whether or not the screen touch thing worked properly.
But look at it on the bright side. By that time, you'll be able to be an election volunteer.
Exactly. Yeah, I'll be able to copy, but it's important that you get out to vote.
Fill us out, please. Fill us up. Sign your name. Print your name here.
Hey, by the way, our good friend Gary Baumgarten says hello to you. We talked to that guy yesterday. He was talking to us from his new digs at his new gig. So
I talked to him a couple of days ago.
Yeah, so he's doing the Pal Talk thing. So he told me to pass along greetings to all at CNN, Ed McCarthy. So consider those greetings passed along. So try to enjoy the rest of your rain-soaked day out there, whatever extent you can.
I always get special greetings from Gary. He calls at dinner time.
I got to tell you, Gary is the coolest guy.
He is.
It was great because I talked to him. I shouldn't say this, but I talked to him off the air yesterday, too. And he just let loose with a huge stream of profanities, which is great. That's always... You know, you hear a guy... It's like seeing your teacher at the store on a Saturday buying a big bottle of baby oil. You just don't know how to deal with that. And so you talk to Gary on the phone as a CNN correspondent for a couple of years. Then you talk to him off the phone, and suddenly it's all the blue language. So it's kind of refreshing in a way.
Well, you know, I'm so surprised because, you know, we always let our guard down on your show, and it's surprising we don't do more of it.
I got my finger above the delay at all times, though, so don't you worry about it. All right.
At the 3 second, the fabulous 3 second delay?
Dude, we up. Where have you been? I got a 40 second delay. That's 40. I got a 40 second delay here.
Well, that's pretty good.
So. I can say something. This is weird. I've done this, actually. Where you can say something or you can hear a piece of audio play in the studio, I can walk all the way to my office and back. I will still not even be live. Like, if I say something here, wait a while, walk to my office, I will be in my office just in time to hear that word come out of the... And that'll screw with your head. If you're in the studio and you play a sound effect or you say something and then you walk all the way down to your office and you walk in just to hear in time to hear yourself saying that over the radio, it's kind of freaky.
Got to run around with a stopwatch. I've got 38 seconds to get this.
No, it's like having a bad flashback or something. All right, there you go, my friend. CNN radio correspondent Ed McCarthy. Enjoy your day, sir.
Thank you, Rick.
There you go, Ed McCarthy. All right. On just a moment, we will be rejoined by Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth as we continue this. It's not so much we as it is me. We are so off track. I was scatterbrained yesterday, even by my own somewhat fragmented standards. And it wasn't just me, it was Dennis, too.
No, and I was totally having a good morning until I had to drive around for half an hour for a parking spot.
Yeah, you're like kind of grumpy today. Not at us. I'm just saying you have that sort of, like, it is that vibe, like when you're...
Well, it's kind of frustrating because, well, because of the parking thing, and then I just remembered I have a ticket previously that I hadn't paid, and then I got my paycheck and seeing how much the government takes out just to be jerks to us.
Yeah.
Like, it's so frustrating.
It's pretty much your best day ever.
It is. I'm getting my hair done today. I'm going to get all kinds of crazy colors.
And we've got this. We've got Rick, this email says, here's some information about ranch dressing. Of course, it's always existed. This is from Todd the Corpse. In Hidden Valley, there are vast lakes of ranch as far as the eye can see. The ranch bubbles up from underground pools of molten ranch from the Earth's core. This is all natural. Not at all man-made salad dressing is then culled from these lakes by twins connected at the hair, riding cows... Riding cows that cannot run. Wow.
God, we're dumb.
Well, what is ranch made of? You tell me.
It's buttermilk.
Oh. That was a big question that kind of went nowhere. Rick, I don't know if this is real or not. Take a bite of food. Hidden Valley Ranch is a real place. Come on, put that food in your mouth.
No.
You can tour it and eat ranch by the bucketful for free. Best show ever. Michelle.
There is what's the chips? Like through Tacoma, there's a something valley. Nally Valley? I'm joking.
Making stuff up now. Let's see. Dean. What, have we had Dean on today? Is Dean calling back? Scotty J? Why does it say this on the screen about Dean? Oh, I see. All right. Oh, I see. He says, let me make another meter. All right. So he hasn't been on. He just wants to continue. He wants to continue the kvetching. All right. Well, Dean and then Tim Riley will join us for the news again in just about 10 seconds. So, Dean, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, sir.
Hello. How are you today?
I'm Dandy. What can I do for you?
I received a delinquent parking ticket in the mail about a year ago. For a vehicle that I had stored in my garage that I hadn't had running for 3 years.
This is going to be like that. This is going to be like that guy that accosted Joshua Jackson outside the movie theater, where there's Tim and I and Sarah and Scott Daly talking to Josh Jackson, and then a guy comes up and he goes, "Josh Jackson, you're right. The political system needs to be fixed. Let me tell you about a speeding ticket that I got." All right. Okay. So what? You got a parking meter for what, sir?
Well, I had a delinquent parking ticket sent to me in the mail by our astute meter persons downtown, mm-hmm. and evidently the meter person taking down my license plate transposed the numbers,
All right, okay.
And it came up with the exact same vehicle. It took me almost 2 weeks to take care of it.
Oh, no, and that's the kind of thing that you can never, well, see, I'm amazed that you were able to. That's the kind of thing that you can almost never convince them of.
Well, I had to beg and plead on the phone.
Yeah. I mean, no, when they, this is the thing that galls so many people about not just the criminal justice system, but especially, and it always seems to be just in automotive matters. I don't know what the hell that's all about. I mean, in every other criminal proceeding, every other time you have to go to court, the burden of proof is on, you know, the man. But when in all matters that are automotive, the burden of proof is on you to show that you did not do it. It doesn't make any sense. It's never made sense to me. I've never been able to understand why that is.
It makes no sense to me either, but thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for calling, Dean. There you go. That's yes, thank you, sir. There you go. That's Dean right there. And this is. Do we have Tim? Is Tim gone?
I think he's here. I think he's just getting the news as it comes. I saw him researching news stuff.
In the meantime, I'll ask Dutchie with Alan. Alan, hello, sir.
Hello. I was would it be please be explained to Sarah that you know all the taxes they take from you. If you have one of those children you don't want, they give you all those money back. Plus,
then
some. It's kind of nice.
Super.
The laugh is what sells that.
I can stay out as late as I want, and I don't have to feed anybody. My only baby I can put in a cage.
Bam! Yeah.
Hey, it's all up to you. You know, they don't come check.
Dude, you might have money, but I got my laugh.
All right. Yes, enjoy
no,
that.
No, thank you.
All right, there you go. Don't think about the house you could buy with the money it's going to cost you to raise that kid. That way lies madness. All right, here's Tim.
What is it, like $100,000?
$180,000. And that's and $180,000, look, when I was in high school, and the woman would come in and tell us about rubbers, and she'd say, and it was, that's not how they put it in high school, of course, but they would come in and they would say, you know, you young men and women need to think about your future. And children. And it was basically a whole lot of, like, don't get knocked up in the back of a Pinto.
No, my little furry Muppet I can just stick in his home.
When Sarah says her little furry Muppet, by the way.
That's my dog. okay.
Oh, I don't have any one of those, you know, I'm an enormous slut, or, you know, one of those sound effects. No, when I was in high school, they would come in and they'd say, you young people don't realize that if you have a child, it's going to cost you, and the figure they always throw us was $180,000.
See, that's a good way, that's good birth control.
But that was 15 years ago.
Oh.
$180,000 in 1990, so.
Especially the kids with their iPods and their phones.
Here's Tim Riley. What with the news and the observations?
All right. Well, let's get back to this then. I guess,
is this A? Am I loading
A,
here?
I guess
all right, let me
A.
load the A. All right, there you go. A!
Well, first, under the...
Stop snorting. Oh. I'm sorry, go ahead. I'm done.
Let's see here. Where are we?
I don't know.
New York Democrat Hillary Clinton said the Bush administration is not being tough enough on the new Iraqi government.
I mean, I have heard over and over again.
I am a crumb.
The government must do this. The Iraqi army must do that. Nobody disagrees with that. The brutal fact is, it is not happening. Hope is not a strategy.
Boy, can't you just see her face on a huge, gigantic screen in the city square that we all have to kneel before three or four, five times a day? And she stands up there and she's just wearing some sort of tight black leather outfit and a skull patch over one eye. And you will kneel before me. I am your God now.
Meanwhile, the State Department senior coordinator for Iraq is asked about the idea of partitioning Iraq into, say, some separate countries.
Partition in Iraq could only be achieved at an expense of human suffering and bloodshed and forced dislocation.
Yeah, we don't want that.
That would be both profound and wholly unacceptable, I believe, to the American people. It is wholly unacceptable to this administration.
Well, so you just want to make Iraq into a bunch of low-budget ghetto duplexes? Is that basically it?
No, perhaps so.
All right, there you go.
If you know someone obese and someone who smokes, many people think that they should pay more for health insurance. A new survey of 1,500 people found that most of those polled want smokers and obese people to pay higher insurance premiums.
Damn straight.
Because they're at higher risk. Dr. Alan Rice of the Cleveland Clinic says although the idea may prompt people to lead healthier lives, there's no quick fix for lower health care costs.
I don't think there's a quick
quick answer to any of these problems. Everyone wonders, how can you actually lower your health care insurance? How can we do that for everybody? And how can you lower your health care spending? There have been a number of good studies which have actually looked at this. Probably the best way you can do it is start exercising on a regular basis, to lose weight if you are overweight, to stop smoking if you smoke, and to start eating a healthier kind of diet.
And seriously,
there's no way to monitor that. Weights fluctuate, people get stressed, and non-smokers smoke, you know?
Yeah, but that's stupid. With this guy saying that there's, you know, if you have to be told, don't shovel forkloads of lard into your mouth, get off your sofa every now and again, and don't shoot heroin into your eyeballs. Really, if you have to be told that, there's no hope for you. You know what I mean? It's not, keeping yourself fit is not easy, but it is simple. There's a difference. I mean, it's hard to do. I mean, I drove today. Should have bicycled? I didn't. I drove. I should eat well. I haven't for weeks now. You know what? And if I suddenly keel over tomorrow from a massive whatever thrombosis or whatever the hell that is, it'd be my own fault. So you know what I'm saying? That's the thing. It is simple to do. It's not easy to do. But I mean, and I have no problem. Some guy goes in. If you're a smoker. And they want to tag you for extra health insurance, fine with me. Doesn't matter. I don't care. You don't like it, don't smoke.
Under the federal No Child Left Behind law, public schools must provide military recruiters with the names, phone numbers, and addresses of their students.
Really?
Unless they or the parents ask otherwise. That's what all this is for. According to the district's count, 61% of Portland public school junior and seniors told school officials this year to withhold this personal information. That's up from 24% in 2004.
Fantastic. Excellent. Good for them. Here's Tim Riley.
Boy George's ex-bandmates reunite and slam the singer. Two of the band's founding members said they're furious with Boy George, who recently accepted a songwriting award without telling them, labeling their new vocalist dreadful, and they claim has made their lives a misery. We never said anything about George because George has always been George, said John Moss, the band's drummer, and Boy George's former boyfriend, but this has gone too far. Later this year, Moss, bassist, or whatever that instrument is.
He's a bassist.
Mikey
Troutman.
Mikey Craig and keyboard player Phil Pickett will be on the road as Culture Club Reborn. Boy George will not rejoin them.
Oh, God. Does it say who's... you might have said this. Does it say who's singing?
No.
See, how sad is that? It doesn't even... You know, and here's the thing. This is like when Alice in Chains came through town. God bless them. But like when Alice in Chains came through and they played Rockfest. Rockfest 11? Yes. Rockfest 11. It was one louder. And we gave away tickets. There was a thing.
Yeah.
But Alice in Chains was the headliner, and it was like, it was Jerry Cantrell, and what's his name? The guy, and then the other guy. And, but of course, Layne Staley, dead. He dead a long time. And so they had some other dude. And it's like, here's the thing. You like to think the bands in your generation are different. This is like Sarah's whole thing about how they're raping Charlotte's Web. Your childhood is being defiled by this horrible CGI version of Charlotte's Web that's coming out. You always like to think that it's going to skip a generation, that all the horrible, cheesy, money-grubbing things that you've seen previous generations do to their art is not going to happen to you, and then it does.
No, because all the young ad execs and people who are giving their ideas are my age. So they're all like, hey, I remember this really great thing called Rainbow Bright when I was younger.
Totally.
Why don't we redo that?
That's exactly what it is. I remember this song by The Cure. Let's use it to sell some sort of product. And that's like when I thought, and just cheap trick thinking surrender about Disneyland. You know what I mean? So that's with like Boy George. I mean, you know, Boy George, who was the focus of Country Club, and they're going to do Culture Club, and they're going to do this Creedence Clearwater Revisited thing, where it's just a bunch of guys, you know, out there, and then some dude they found in a Greyhound station somewhere. Let's talk to Dan. Dan, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello,
Rick,
sir.
What's going on?
What's up, brother?
Not much, man. I got a story about the city and how broke they are. I heard you talking about that.
Yes.
My girlfriend, well, she's my fiance now, she racked up $1,600 worth of parking tickets.
$1,600?
Well, with interest and everything, and while she was at Portland State, yeah.
Okay.
$1,600. So they fined her and give her another parking ticket, but instead they confiscate her car. And the city confiscates the car. Now, she still owes $1,600, and she said, well, what if I don't want my car back?
Right.
The city says, well, we sell your car, but if we get $1,500 or $1,600 for your car, you still have a $1,600 debt. We just take the money that we got for your car.
Oh,
that's handy of them.
Yeah, isn't that clever?
Yeah, someday there'll be a glorious revolution of the people, though, Dan. So just keep that in mind.
Oh, it's starting with you.
Okay. I'll just take that to mean that I'm going to lead it, not that I'm going to be the first against the wall. Let's do one more here, and then we'll take this call, and then we'll break and come back at the top of the hour. Here's one more from Tim Riley, who is lurking at that thing we call the Ministry of Truth.
Now, from New York comes word, residents there under the age of 14 and up prohibited from using indoor tanning booths. Anyone between the ages of 14 and 18 must have a parent come with them and sign a consent form. Tanning salons that violate the new law face a fine of $250 per infraction.
Man, at least you got that. At least kids have, you know, over the age of 14, have tanning salons. If tanning salons were still sort of in their infancy when I was going to high school, and you would always spot there was this one girl that would come to school every December, and she had that weird, what is that, orangey crap that you rub onto your skin?
The fake tanning looks like self-tanning.
And you could always tell people have done self-tanning, A, because they look like a carrot, and B, because the palms of their hand, people don't tan the palms of their hands typically. And so she would come in just like a nice even shade of orange. You know what I mean? It was like you would just rolled her around in some sort of orange hued confection. It's just terrible. Benjamin, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, sir.
Rick, thanks for having me on.
Benjamin, what's up, brother?
Hey, like yourself and Sarah there, I've also chosen not to have children and gone so far as to have the vasectomy and everything. I'm just making sure it doesn't happen by accident. But here's part of the reason. One reason, responsibility, don't want it. Number two, if you go to, you just do a Google search and you do child cost calculator, you'll come up with this link to a place on babycenter.com, and it has the cost of raising a child calculator. If you have a child in 2006, you live in a city or a suburb in the West.
That would be, well, we live in a city, okay.
There you go. Your combined annual household income is between $38,000 and $64,000. You are a two-parent home, and you plan to send your child to college. You will be spending.
Wait, hold on. So this, before you, Sarah, do you want to guess?
$290,000.
I'll say $250,000.
Really? Yeah, Tim Riley?
What's that?
Estimates on sending a child through college and raising him to the age of 18.
About 200,000, somewhere around there.
What have we
okay.
got?
Okay, well, that is lowballing it. You're looking at $500,000.
Oh!
If you choose not to send your child to college,
fend
and not
yourself.
Make him scrounge on his own, you're going to save about $50,000.
You're only going to save, so 450, how is that even possible?
It's absolutely ridiculous. Now, to show that this is accurate, these figures and averages, it says, are based on the U.S. Department of Agriculture's 2000 annual report, expenditures on children by families. So this is for real, folks. Check your pocketbook before you decide you have an extra $500,000 to spend on spawning.
Hey, you know, you know what you should do with that? You take that link or that whatever. You really ought to send that to Lycus. You ought to send that to, because that's exactly the kind of stuff. Because I think he and I have both been using that same $180,000 figure, which again, the one they gave me back in 1991. In fact, I think Tom is that before you decide to go bareback. Think about $180,000, you know, and it's $180,000, but it's actually more. It's four, even without college, it's $450,000. Damn.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Hey, I'm going to let you go. I'm going to email that to him right now.
Thank you, sir. There you go. Bob. Believable. All right, 503-7... I'm going to play the Weekend Geek here. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Play the Weekend Geek. We'll take a break, come back, do a little bit more with Tim Riley. We have Jim Roop coming up next hour. We will give away those front row seats and backstage for Tim Conway and Harvey Korman. You stay there. So Rick, bless you. It's the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970 Solid State Radio.
And now, the Rick Emerson Show presents the Weekend Geek.
What up there, my Portland peeps? This is Aaron Duran of GeekInTheCity.com with the all-new, but not really improved edition of The Week in Geek.
Wow, you fool! Wow!
Sony has put its faith in Blu-ray technology. While the porn industry is standing firmly behind HD DVD, these new format wars are going to turn bloody and a little sticky. However, the Broadcom Corporation wishes to change all that, as they will soon release the world's first dual-format player. Able to accept Blu-ray and HD DVD discs, Broadcom Corp hopes to profit from both sides of the battle. No word yet on how much the player will cost, but I don't really care,
Because if I have to buy one more version of Army of Darkness, someone's getting brained.
Now shut up and look stupid.
Crowd Control Productions, the maker of EVE Online, announced today that they will be merging with role-playing giant White Wolf Publishing. This means that hasty, angst-ridden, clove-smoking geeks no longer have to limit themselves to the gaming table as they talk to their other pale, pasty friends about which vampire they'd rather do, Armand or Lestat. They can go online and do it now, and in their underwear.
Have you lost your mind?
And finally, this weekend in Portland, Oregon, all geeks unite at Oricon 28, Portland's premier science fiction and fantasy convention. It starts at 9 a.m. on Friday, November 17th, and lasts until the wee hours of the morning on Sunday, November 19th. It's located at the Marriott Downtown Waterfront Park on 1401 Southwest NATO Parkway. You can see yours truly speaking at a few superhero-themed panels and then trying to hit on some sexy live-action gamer chicks, both of which will probably fail. You can find out more at oricon.org. That's www.oricon.org. I'm Aaron Duran of geekinthecity.com, wishing you gold bikini wishes and Orion slave girl dreams. This has been
The Week in Geek. Only from the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970 Solid State Radio.